reality. Perfect model pursuit. Everyone in existence is an artist. One draws a picture in thought about every activity they are involved in, whether they are conscious of it or whether it is unconscious thought that is doing the work. Our environment is based on the thoughts that we project. One can project wholesome, godlike thoughts, or one can project something less than that. We are subject to the thoughts of what others project unless we build our own atmosphere around our thoughts. And the same with everyone else. No evil can befall one if they have their protection by having the truth surround them, which is an ongoing, unceasing prayer. Every event one is involved in, whether it is walking across a room, running out on a racetrack, in competition, driving a race car, riding a horse, racing a horse, studying, doing dishes, preparing food, eating in a restaurant, driving a car, gazing out into the sky to try to identify constellations or an individual star. It does not matter what the activity is. It is the utilization of thought. If one leaves their door open to their thought, that is very necessary if it is open to truth and filters everything that is unlike truth before it becomes part of consciousness. One has a full-time occupation and avocation by taking care of one's own thought, because their entire life is based on the attention one gives to one's thought. If we let it be like an empty closet with no structure, nothing to protect it, nothing to organize it, nothing to filter, then it will fill up just like a closet in a home with a variety of things. Some may be worth something and some may be worth nothing. The contents will be unorganized and we won't even know what we have. So one needs to have a structure in thought, just like they should have a structure in a closet. One should filter what goes into the closet, just like one should filter what goes into thought. Thought, speech, and action, if one may abbreviate that easily by just TSA, T for thought, S for speech, A for action. Our TSA is all a product of motive. Motive is a part of truth. The sixth synonym or synonymous term for God, as defined by Mary Baker Eddy, and as enumerated in the 7 days of creation in Genesis chapter 1 and the first part of chapter 2. It is the foundation of all creative structure. One needs to begin with an enlightened creative thought, which is a function of mind. And that creative thought needs to be reacting with omniscience, a quality of mind, which includes intelligence, wisdom, and knowing. And when they interact with each other, then one is able to have a productive action. The productive action can easily end up as an accomplishment if the principles that relate to the activity are followed tenaciously with perseverance and the continuous filtering. Once there is accomplishment, it can then be measured as power. Mary Baker Eddy states that the good we do and embody gives us the only power obtainable. So obviously, accomplishment is measured by its goodness. If it is a godlike activity with no delusion, no deflection, no diversion, in other words, a reflection of real substance, which is spirit, then it is going to be flawless. For spirit, the only real substance is pureness, and therefore flawless, and therefore transparent, and therefore reflection. So one needs to be reflecting the qualities of God by acknowledging the qualities of spirit. And if that is done, then the accomplishment will be wholesome, pure, and of great value. In other words, it will be filled with power. Mary Baker Eddy makes very clear that we do our own sculpturing of our lives. And just as a professional sculptor or painter or pianist or engineer, architect, homemaker, whatever the pursuit is, one needs to have a model which is a model of perfection. And one needs to constantly look at that if they want to utilize the moments which only come once in one's lifetime. That moment disappears, and we can either have used it or abused it, ignored it. It can be constructive, destructive, or totally passive, totally lost, totally wasted. Of course, abusing it is wasting it, and that means that it is utilized, if you want to call it utilized, toward an evil activity. So that obviously is abusing it, wasting it. Moment is defined as the smallest measurement of time, and as noted, that time only happens once in one's lifetime. Mary Baker Eddy states that the difference between success and failure is based on how one uses the moments. In other words, it's not blocking out a certain period of time on one's calendar that makes the difference. It is how one uses the moments. What could she possibly mean by that? One could block out 5 hours to study. How could a moment be the difference between success and failure instead of blocking out 5 hours of study? In fact, it could be 5 hours a day or 5 hours twice a day. It seems that a reasonable way to analyze what she means by that would be linking it to praying ceaselessly. In other words, getting back to the TSA, thought, speech, and action, what are we doing with every moment? Are we utilizing the reflection qualities of spirit to reflect the qualities of God? It doesn't matter what the activity is, are we reflecting God? Are we reflecting the terms which represent the qualities of God? Are we utilizing the qualities of mind, several of which have been mentioned already? Intelligence, wisdom, knowing, creative ability, action, accomplishment, which results in power. And are we relying on the real substance, which is spirit, or are we giving heavy weight to matter, to the belief that there is life, truth, and intelligence in matter, to the belief that our life is dependent upon matter, our very existence, or a relationship with someone, or an activity, an event of any kind whatsoever? Is it dependent upon money, for example? What is money? What is the purpose of money? It's a medium of exchange. Money doesn't do us any good if we can't buy what we think is going to provide the need. And that's exactly what happens in many countries. It becomes worthless because of mismanagement. How much money does it take to buy a good quality man's suit or a good quality outfit for a child or a woman? Or a baseball team to give them the outfit where everything matches and represents what they are supposed to be representing. How about an automobile, motorcycle, an airplane? 100 years ago, a very small amount of dollars compared to today would buy any one of those things. So certainly, currency, or what is deemed as money, is not something that is reliable and stable. The only thing that is reliable and stable is something that is of the substance of spirit, not so-called matter. There was a man that had 3 sons. He got to his time in life where he decided he was going to divide up his assets. He had 3 assets of monetary value. He had land. He had a beautiful home, which was built on the land, and he had extraordinary contents in the home. He was able to determine the value of each of those 3 items, but he did not disclose it to his sons. He wanted to please his sons and also treat them fairly. He decided that in order to determine where their heart was about the 3 different assets, and so he asked them each to write down, if they had their choice, what would they like to have? the land, the home that was on the land, or the contents of the home. So they each wrote it down, folded the paper over so no one could see their choice, and they put their name on the paper and handed it to their dad. So their dad said, "You go in the other room and let me look over these choices that you've made, and then I will decide what I'm going to do about it." Now the father did not know what their choice would be, so he was very interested to see if he was going to have to determine how to resolve a conflict. If two or all three of them wanted the same thing, he had a problem that had to be resolved. So he slowly and carefully opened up the notes. And the first one he opened happened to be the one that his eldest son had given him. And it didn't really surprise him, because the son chose the land, and he thought to himself, "Interesting. I'm going to have to ask him why he chose the land." He opened up the second note, and it was from his second oldest son, and he chose the house. So he was kind of scratching his head, thinking, "I wonder why he chose the house." And he opened up the third note, and he thought, surely his son, youngest son, must be wanting either the land or the house. And much to his surprise, the youngest son wanted the contents of the home. He said, "I wonder what he's going to do with the contents when he has no home to put it in. He must have some other idea." So he brought the sons in, and he says, "Each one of you have made your choice, and now I want to ask you why you made your choice." So he gives the eldest son the first time to speak, and he said, "Well, Father, I chose the land." And of course, the other two didn't know what he chose, and they didn't know if there was going to be a conflict. But they kind of both smiled, because they knew that they had not chosen the land. So they decided, "Well, I made it through that first choice, because there's no conflict on what I'm desiring to have, at least from the eldest." And so when the father asked him, "Well, why did you choose the land?" He said, "Well," he says, "I figure the land is always going to be available. The house may deteriorate over a period of time. It will take maintenance and so forth." And he said, "So I'm happy with the land." So he goes to the second son, and he says out loud, because the other two didn't know what he had chosen, and he tells the eldest son, he says, "You know, you may not get the land by yourself. You may have to divide it up depending on what the other two sons want, because I want to be fair to everyone." So he then announces that the second son has chosen the home. And so that brought a relief to the third one, as well as the first one, because then they both knew they wouldn't have any conflict. So he asked the second son, "Why did you choose the home?" He said, well, it's really a beautiful home. And it does include at least the ground that is underneath the home, even though there's no extra land that comes with it. And he says, I can utilize the home. If I got the land, I wouldn't have a home to live in. And if I had the contents without the home, what would I do with the contents? So he says, very well. He says, let's see what the third son has to say. You might still have a conflict. So he looks at the note of the third son and reads it. And it says that he wants the contents. So the other two have a sigh of relief. And they wonder, what in the world is he going to do with the contents? So the father asks him, says, son, why did you choose the contents? He says, well, I don't really care about the furniture so much, but I know that the library you have contains so much information that I can learn from, and no one can ever take that away from me. The house could be destroyed in some kind of a catastrophe, earthquake or whatever. It could be destroyed. And the land could be damaged by an earthquake. The land could be taken over by some army or something, as well as the house. But what I learned from the library, no one can take that away from me, because that's going to be within me. It's going to be within my consciousness. And just think, if I knew everything in this extensive library that you have accumulated all these years, wow. I can't even dream of how that would open up new dimensions to me in my life. Well, there you have it. The substance he saw, the younger one saw, not as being in land, not as being in a physical structure, but being in the knowledge that he would gain from the library. And of course, anyone that studies the great works of Mary Baker Eddy and other writers which are advanced in Christian Science, what they gain from that library or that resource is beyond any measurement, such as physical currency, beyond the value of any house or any land. He was looking at what real substance was to him, and it was learning new ideas. If one is in pursuit of understanding, identifying, accepting, and really understanding what reality is, which can only be done by living the qualities of God, demonstrating them, using our moments to focus on what Mary Baker Eddy tells us is praying ceaselessly. In other words, practicing the qualities that represent God, the qualities of mind, which has already been touched on, spirit, also has been touched on, and soul. Soul is spiritual sense. Spiritual because the only substance is spirit, and sense because that's how she defines it. She defines soul as sense, and she defines it as spiritual sense, which means that when we are looking or hearing or touching or smelling or feeling. We need to be doing it through the lens of spirit. We need to be having spiritual perception. If we want to do the seeing that we should be seeing, and we need to have spiritual understanding, we need to be developing the understanding through the spiritual lens of whatever it is that we're seeing. Whatever it is we're hearing, we need to understand it. And the only way we can do that is through the sense of soul, which is utilizing the spiritual senses of seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling. It all has to be done through the lens of spirit. So, spiritual understanding, spiritual perception. In other words, filtering out anything that is unlike God and seeing the truth. When Jesus looked at an individual that may appear to have been dead or dying or ill with a disease or sinful, whatever the problem may have been, or an event, like he was in the ship with his disciples and he was sleeping, going from one side to the other, and there was a storm, and the disciples were fearful that they would sink. So they woke him up in a panic. He had to see the perfect situation, not one that was chaos. When he saw the blind man, or there were two blind men, I believe, in one instance, he had to see them as already seeing. He couldn't see them as being blind. He could not accept a defect in spirit. You know, spirit is the substance. That was the capability of being able to see flawlessly. The action was mind, but the substance had to be spirit that the vision was made of. The vision is of the substance of spirit. Jesus saw the perfect model. If we are going to find reality, we have to be pursuing the perfect model in everything that we're thinking about. All TSA, all thought, all speech, and all action. We have to be looking for the perfect model. So when we are using a creative ability, reflecting it from God, and we're combining that with the intelligence and wisdom and knowing of mind, and letting that bring forth the action, which is going to bring forth accomplishment, only if we're focusing on spirit, of course. And that brings forth the power. That's how it all works. Principle is the fourth quality of God in the days of creation order, or the development of any activity. And principle means that it is in balance. It is a self-operating. Think of it as some kind of a device that is operating without any obstruction, without any friction, any wind, anything to restrain it, like one of these little motion devices that's inside of a sealed glass container, a pendulum swinging, or whatever. It has no friction, so it goes on continuously. Well, that's how principle is. Principle is continuous. Whether we pay any attention to it or not, it is the governing principle. There is a governing principle about every single activity. We have to know the principle in whatever we're involved in. we're building a house. We can't say, God, build this for me. Driving a car, we can't take our hands off the wheel and say, well, God will drive the car. We have to know the principle of whatever we're involved in. And we need to be praying ceaselessly to evaluating whether or not one is following, that one being ourselves. Is one following the principle in whatever activity they're involved in? A relationship. One has to be giving in a relationship. One cannot be in a relationship if their goal is to receive. Oh, I'd like to marry this person because they've got a lot of money. Or, wow, that's a beautiful woman and people will be jealous of me when I walk around with her arm on mine. If we're looking from a material perspective, any so-called joy that's going to be received is going to be very short-lived. Sooner or later, one will discover that joy is not in anything that is based on matter. So principle is always in balance, always harmonious, always operating. It is the core. Life is the fifth quality in the series of development. And life is living the qualities of God. Are we living it? Are we just talking about it and being a hypocrite? Or are we living it? Are we living the qualities of intelligence and wisdom and knowing? Are we doing really ignorant things? Or are we intelligent in our actions and our thought and our speech? The TSA. Are we intelligent or ignorant? Do we know what we're doing? We have to know the principle of whatever activity we're involved in. If we're in business, we have to know our business. Whatever business we're in, we have to know it. And of course, the business better be wholesome, or there's never going to be any real reward that comes from it. And by reward, I don't just mean money. I'm talking about fulfillment, satisfaction, that we're doing something good and reflecting that out. So life is living. In other words, exercising all of the qualities of God with all of the other qualities. Life is not dependent upon a calendar. It's not dependent upon someone else. Our fulfillment in life comes because we understand what life is. And life is independent of any event or activity of any kind, any individual, any relationship. It's not dependent upon the government taking care of us. It is dependent upon our understanding that there is one source of all existence. The young man that chose the contents of the home because it had this enormous, wonderful library. He was going to look to what he had learned as his source. And obviously, if the library was of really high quality things, he was going to learn about truth. He was going to learn about mind and spirit and soul and life and love, as well as truth. Truth is the sixth quality that represents the synonymous terms for God in the days of creation order. And truth is consciousness. It is the invariable standard. Our motive should be based on truth. In all TSA, all thought, speech, and action should have a motive of truth. And if it does, if it has a motive that is intelligent and wise and knowing, spiritual, spirit being substance, and if it's going to be doing everything in line with the spiritual senses, not material senses, so-called, but spiritual senses, and if it's going to be living the qualities of God, and it's going to be abiding by the principle of whatever activity we're involved in, then we're going to have the results of our motive be effective. Nothing can stop it. Nothing can dilute it, deflect it, interfere with it, or reverse it. The final quality of God in the days of creation order, any development that we really want to be involved in that is wholesome to bring about a wonderful accomplishment, which is going to provide and reflect out tremendous power to the atmosphere, and that is love. Love is like a mother, just like life can be related to a father. The symbol of life is for a father. And a mother is the symbol for love. Love is the receiving and the nurturing, the caring for each one of the qualities. It's the nurturing of intelligence and wisdom and knowing. It's the nurturing of understanding that spirit is the only substance. In other words, always seeking the spiritual nature. And of course, that relates to soul, because the seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling are the spiritual qualities, the spiritual senses. So we need to be mothering those spiritual senses as opposed to catering to the worthless material senses. There's a song written by Susan Mack, and it says, choose good. And she says, the opposite of good is not evil. The opposite of good is false impression, illusion. In other words, there is nothing that is the opposite of good. Good is the reality. If we want to choose good, we're choosing reality. In fact, in one language, good is defined as God. God is defined as good. And that's why Mary Baker Eddy indicates that in the glossary. The definition of good is God. She often uses the word God good. God, comma, good. We will have fulfillment if we're nurturing all of the qualities of God in our life. That's the most wonderful fulfillment anyone could have. There's no experience that could be any better than a fulfillment that is based on spirit. Because it doesn't come and go. There's no variation. There's no constant deviation from a standard of a perfect principle. There's no variableness, neither shadow of turning with perfection. And that's one of the terms for love is perfection, because we have reached the finale. Because love is nurturing all of the other qualities, so that enables us to obtain the fulfillment, the wholeness, the completeness. Maria Brunson did a wonderful job in describing the various synonymous terms for God and how one can see that they work together. One couldn't just say, okay, I'm going to be exercising mind. Well, how are you going to do that? If you have no substance, mind cannot exist. So it has to interact with spirit, because spirit is the only substance. The substance of intelligence has to be spiritual. Spirit is the substance of knowing. It's a substance of wisdom. It's a substance of action. It's a substance of capacity, facility, functionality. All those are qualities of mind, but they don't do any good unless they are of the substance of spirit. And how are we going to even identify them unless we understand what soul is all about, which is the identifier, because it is utilizing spiritual sense to relate to everything that we are thinking of as a topic. If we don't use spiritual sense, we're going to be in a state of confusion and chaos, which is the opposite of principle. Principle is balance and harmony. So no matter what synonymous term that we decide that we want to think about first, it relates to every other quality of every other synonymous term. And none of them can operate in isolation, because God is all. God is one, and there is nothing but God. And God is all of those things. It's a three-letter word, just an easy three-letter word that represents everything that I've mentioned today, which, of course, I'm no creator of any of this. This is just kind of the extemporaneous thoughts that come while I'm recording this in considering the topic of reality, what reality is, and what do we mean by a perfect model, pursuing a perfect model. What does that all mean? Well, I hope there's been some kind of a clue here to explain at least the viewpoint expressed on what that does really mean and how one can relate to it. Mr. Rawson, one of the most successful Christian Science practitioners of all time, was gazing out a window with another advanced Christian Science practitioner and visiting about whatever they were talking about. And this was 100 years ago, back around somewhere between 1910 and 1920. And as they were looking out, there was a man that was pulling a wooden cart with an animal of some kind, an oxen or a horse or mule or something, and it was full of rocks. He was driving the cart, and something got his attention. He was concerned about something in the back end of the cart. I don't know whether he thought the tailgate was loose or what, but anyway, he stopped the animal and got out and went back to look. When he did that, he was right behind the cart, full of these rocks mounded up on the cart. And something alarmed the animal, and the animal raised up. And as a result, it dumped the entire load of rocks on top of the man, the driver. Totally covered up. And Mr. Rawson and his friend saw this take place. And instantly, Mr. Rawson said, "There is nothing but God." Three words. Four words. There is nothing but God. As he finished saying those four words, the man jumped up out from being covered up by the rocks, came up out of there like a rocket. Without a scratch, without an injury. Walked around, got in the cart. Pulled it out of the way so he could load it up. And then he was on his way. Obviously, Mr. Rawson understood with a high degree of confidence and faith, understanding exactly what those seven synonymous terms for God represent in the qualities. He'd obviously nurtured those qualities, his understanding of those qualities. To have instantaneous success, instantaneous healing. Another very, very fine practitioner used to have appointments every 15 minutes, all day long. He did this in one location for like 15 years. All day long, 15-minute appointments. At the end of 15 minutes, each one of them was healed. He walked into a Christian Science nursing home. And he asked the attendant at the door what she was doing. And she said, "Well, I'm supposed to be watching everybody that comes in and leaving so I can keep a record of who's here." He said, "Is that what your job entails?" She said, "Yes." Well, he certainly had some things to say about that. He said, "The only thought you should let enter into this home where all these people are in great need is a thought of pure spirit. Not a thought that somebody is coming to visit somebody that is ill or a new patient coming in that has a serious problem. Your job is to guard the door of thought so that only the thought that is in reality is permitted to pass through that door. The one that is already looking strictly at the perfect model. That's the only thought you should let in here." Well, the result was that everyone in the nursing home was healed. That gentleman's name was Joel Goldsmith. He wrote a lot of wonderful books. Mr. Rawson, the gentleman referred to earlier about looking out the window with another Christian Science practitioner friend, wrote a book entitled Life Understood from a Scientific and Religious Point of View. He wrote another one entitled Treatment or Healing by True Prayer. He wrote many books. In fact, he is the one that discovered retroactive healing, where he was able to make the healing effective at the time at which the individual yielded to asking for Christian Science treatment, which would have been a period before he even knew or he was notified that there was a problem and that they were seeking his assistance. That book includes 1,315 different ailments and how to heal each one of them by understanding the counterfact to what the belief is of the ailment. We have the works of both Joel Goldsmith and Frederick L. Rawson on our website. Everything is free of charge for PDF downloads. We don't sell anything. We don't sell hard copies. And we have many other writings from the top, most advanced students of Christian Science. The motive in providing this recording, all of which has been extemporaneous, as noted earlier in the recording, but the motive is to be of assistance, introduce the listener, or maybe enlighten them further than what they had thought about the topic, and to inform you that these things are all available and encourage you to use your moments and pray ceaselessly, as mentioned in the recording, so that all may benefit, so that you can reflect your increased understanding out into the atmosphere for the benefit of all humanity. It is expected that there will be positive results from anything that anyone does in practicing the truth in individual lives, as it will be reflected out into the atmosphere. It's like walking by someone that has a frown, holding their head down, and when you make eye contact with them, you give them a big smile. It can't be resisted. It spreads throughout the universe. It's in the atmosphere. If we do that, we get a better understanding with each little thing we do for humanity and bringing joy to someone else. We're getting closer to understanding that God is all. God is omnipresent. And that there is nothing but God. And that is our perfect model. That is reality. Amen.